You speak American?
Huh?
Do you speak American?
No, señor.
Yours, mine, theirs.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Yours, Mine, and Theirs, the world's fourth most important movie podcast, where the misguided principle of democracy forces us to watch certain movies. My name is Roy, Josh, and John. Do you two trust me? Do you trust me? Do you guys trust me yet?
Sorry, no. Me llamo Juan Madsen, pero puedes llamarme Alberto Rennick.
Crap, John. Hola, me llamo S. Josh, and I will not be struck by man or beast.
All right. Well, anyway, welcome, John, and of course, Josh. Welcome back, back to the podcast.
Thank you.
Glad to have you back. This is your
to be back.
This is your third round, but this is the second time, kind of in our official thing, right? And so, the way we did this time is instead of Josh bringing three of his favorite movies, which do you remember what you brought last time?
Well, it was Rocky II. Mm-hmm. And Amelie,
yes,
yep. And was it OJ?
It was OJ. Yeah.
Which has started so many arguments. Yeah. Anyway, but
it has. Yes.
But this time around, we have
like, what's the state of racism in this country? Like, it started that argument. Yeah. So thanks a lot, Josh.
I feel like we could have resolved that in the podcast if we would have focused.
Yeah. Well, So anyway, this time around, the gimmick is Josh had to bring three movies he's never seen before but has always wanted to. And I was shocked to learn that Josh had actually never seen The Lords of Flatbush. But here we are. So we're going to talk about Bullet, a Steve McQueen classic, The Lords of Flatbush, which is the Henry Winkler classic, and Casa de Mi Padre, which is the Christina Aguilera classic.
It's not a classic. So, like, did we – let me just ask this right up front. Are we considering reevaluating the 2022 theme of having people bring three new movies on?
I don't think so. I think
my selections caused this introspection.
I'm not saying that's the case, but I'm just asking the question as a sidestep to your comment.
No, I think we got to give – I would love to give everyone a chance and see what happens. Okay. So we've already done it with Andy, and it was semi-successful.
Semi-successful. And to be clear, Josh, I'm not blaming you for this. I'm not blaming you for anything. No, that's not the case. I'm not blaming you for this. Like, and that's kind of my favorite thing about it is you're the least like to blame – because that's the whole point of this experiment is, like, you definitely haven't seen these. So I can't blame you for any feelings I may have about any of these films.
I don't understand why you're
just want to make that
throwing the word blame around so much. Did I read these movies differently?
Well, don't we have to blame somebody?
You mean think?
Okay, well, maybe. Well, I guess we haven't discussed them yet. I'm getting ahead of everything. This is what we do at the end.
I was feeling so good about myself.
So I will say, this time around, I didn't look up the IMDb scores or Rotten Tomato scores until after I put my awards together. But I will say that the average Rotten Tomato between these three movies is 68%, and that's largely because Bullet is 98%. The Lords of Flatbush, oddly enough, is a fresh film.
I was shocked.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
And Casa de Mi Padre, you know, it got over 40%, so there's that. But,
I wouldn't have expected. I thought Casa de Mi Padre was kind of well received, even though, like, it's like one. I think that was it. Kind of marked the beginning of Will Ferrell exhaustion. Like, oh, he made a Spanish comedy. I don't know if I had the energy to see this, which is why none of us saw it. Right? That's why we have to watch it now. Because none of us saw it the first time. Right?
I will say none of these movies did well at the box office. Bullet cost $5 million and it only made $500,000. The Lords of Flatbush cost $160,000 and 12 shirts. And I have no idea how much it made. I don't know if it made back the shirts.
12 shirts. That's right, because Sylvester Stallone.
He was paid a dozen shirts.
I was paid in a dozen shirts.
I think 50,000 of that was on egg cream.
Egg cream.
Yes.
So Casa de...
that was my next question. I'm like, where did they, what did they do with all that money?
Well, the soundtrack. None of it was in reshoots, that's for sure. So,
well, the soundtrack was just, it sounded to me like the soundtrack was just improvised in the studio.
100%. They filmed it, and then they're like, okay, we need a song. Let's roll the film and just start singing. And it's like, I'm singing. We're on a motorcycle. We're going to the beach now. Yep. Like, every song was that.
I'm not even sure there was much of a script. They were just like
we'll get,
ad-libbing like half the stuff.
We'll get there.
It's possible. We will get there, but it is possible there was an incredible script before it was doctored by Sylvester Stallone, as it says in the credits.
So Casa de Mi Padre actually made $2 million. It cost $6 million and it made $8 million. So I guess that's the one that really pulled in the big bucks.
Huh.
But yeah, there you go. I mean, here we are. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about? Anything that's happened over the last couple weeks before we dive into Bullet? And I think, John, that's yours.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
Well, actually, let me ask you. Roy, you said you had seen this. Do you remember the circumstances?
Oh, it was probably a random Netflix disc in the mail that came.
Okay. Just because you knew, like, it's a famous Steve McQueen movie. That's all I knew. It's like, Steve McQueen is in this movie called Bullet. And I know that, and it's just kind of this movie trivia thing that I knew. But I didn't know anybody who'd seen it, you know? It's just, like, a thing we know. The poster.
Yeah, I will say quickly that, like, at the end of the movie, I was like, what? What? And I was, like, confused, like, what had happened or why the movie had been made. And I kind of had to think about it a little bit. So there is, like, a serious point to it. But this is a different movie.
Okay, so anyway, Bullet. So that's his name, and he's a cop, and he's in San Francisco, and he gets this assignment to protect this guy who leaves the organization, right? They call it the organization, like capital letters, the organization. It's like Spectre or something, but, you know, it's the mob, right? Well, the Chicago mob.
If the organization comes into San Francisco, they're going to run head-on into the syndicate who had just murdered Billy Lowe.
Yes. Oh, that's actually, hang on. Let's see. What's the timing of this? 1968?
I don't know. I guess I can tell you.
Okay. Yeah. Billy Lowe. How from far Game of Death? From is that Game what we're talking Death. About?
Yeah. Okay.
They go and like, okay, well, here's the hotel that he's decided to hole up in, you know, for his protection. And Steve McQueen is like, are you kidding me? Anyone on that freeway just outside the window can drive by and shoot him through the window.
Do you know what an amazing shot that would be? Like, from the freeway? I'm assuming Walt
Dyer. I figure he took it to
80 miles an hour.
I mean, it seems like he's like, okay, you know what? I'm no longer in the mob. I'm going to have to, like, worry about finances. Yeah. And so he found the hotel – with a view of the freeway, like the freeway is above the window.
Yeah.
It's like the hotel is right below a freeway.
So
and you see cars driving above you when you look out the window.
I guess if you're on the freeway and you're driving straight towards the window, then you're making the bullet go 80 miles per hour faster.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They wanted to make sure that it was. Okay. So anyway, his name is Ross, right? His name is Ross. Johnny Ross. He's holed up there. And Steve McQueen, he gives out the assignments like, you take first watch, you take second watch, you take whatever. And so kind of in the middle of the night, Johnny Ross actually unlatches the chain to the door, which is kind of weird. And we might have to talk about it a little when we're talking about it because I'm not totally sure what happened, but I think I kind of know what happened.
I have no idea. Okay. I can't.
We'll wrap around. Let's talk at the end. Let's talk at the end.
Okay.
And so, he unlatches the door. Anyway, bad guys kick the door in. They shoot Johnny Ross, like, right in the neck. They shoot the other cop in the leg. The other cop survives, thank goodness, because I always hate seeing that when, you know, nice guys are just, you know, doing their normal thing. And they – okay, so anyway, the witness is in, like, ICU or whatever. Mm. He's in big trouble. Chalmers. Senator Chalmers. Mm. Super Nintendo Chalmers is – he's on Bullitt's case. He's like, ah, you wrecked my witness. I need this witness to testify on Monday morning. And Bullitt is like, yeah, well, I don't know. I think you kind of told him where he was or something. He's like, what, are you saying that I killed my own witness? And he's like, I don't know. We didn't tell anybody and yada, yada, yada. So anyway, but then they try to kill Ross again at the hospital. And then Steve McQueen says, okay, you know what? Oh, Ross dies.
Yeah.
The guy dies. The witness dies. The guy who unlatched the chain dies.
But he just succumbs to injuries, right? Like
he just succumbs to injuries. Yeah. And this is like the following day. And Steve McQueen says, okay, you know what? We're going to steal a body. And so they steal the body and he doesn't tell his superiors. And in the meantime, he goes driving his car and the bad guys are chasing him. But then he's chasing him. And he's chasing the bad guy suddenly. and he steers them into a smoking gas station where they explode. So anyway, they're at a huge dead end. What's going on? Bullitt is like, what's going on? We don't know what's happening. They get a tip to call, like to find like a phone call that the witness made. And they go to that location and there's a dead woman there. They search through some luggage and they find the luggage belongs to a person named Rennick. He deduces that the witness is not the man who was killed, but the witness is still free. He did not make arrangements with Senator Chalmers. He did not make arrangements with the police. The witness is not going to testify. He's just going to flee the country with the money he stole from the mob. So they go to the airport to try and stop him, and he switches flights on him. They try to board the plane. He hops out the back. Then he runs across the field, and then he runs back to the airport. Big mistake, witness. Big mistake, Johnny Ross, because he gets trapped in a vestibule. He shoots one guy, and then Steve McQueen is like, you're not testifying for anybody. Blam, blam, blam. And he kills the witness. So I guess the mob gets away pretty well.
No, the mob wins. Right?
Yeah, the mob totally wins, right?
Yeah.
I think. I that's kind of a big problem I have. I think I understand what happens in the movie, but even though the guy was dangerous, he had a gun, and he did shoot another guy at the airport, but maybe you still have to take him alive because otherwise what's the point of all these people getting shot if we don't have this witness guy?
Well, at least he stuck it to Chalmers.
Yeah, he did.
That Chalmers is which I also don't get.
Yeah.
Chalmers is such a stuffed shirt. He's a stuffed shirt, and he's just kind of like this annoying boss guy who orders Bullitt around. But like, was Chalmers corrupt or anything? I feel like it was implied that he was in on something.
I don't know. There is that moment
it
where
doesn't really say specifically.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's the moment where they're discussing like that someone tipped off that Ross was at the hotel, and Chalmers says whoever tipped the mafia off, that's not the point here right now, right? And I feel like there's no more important point at that part of the investigation than, you know, who tipped off the mob. But whatever. So Chalmers is thank heavens he's casually racist. He doesn't trust the black doctor and insists on him being replaced by a white doctor.
Yeah.
So that's nice.
So that's bad. So that's why he doesn't deserve to get his precious witness to take down his precious mob organization to save the country, precious man hours and manpower, and put the precious evil guys behind bars because he's racist.
This was supposed to lead to him running for the Senate. Like, this was going to be a big thing for him and launch his senatorial campaign, right?
Right. That's the big problem. I guess that's it. It's like Chalmers doesn't care about the organized crime that, you know, he's getting. He just wanted to get this person to testify against the mob for his own benefit, and so it, like, he didn't have like pure intent, but still, I mean, isn't it doing good?
Yeah, he's still trying to do good.
The organized crime.
Yeah.
Right. Like, regardless of the motive, like, it's still doing good.
So,
yeah. And I mean, and they imply that he's the one who tipped off the mob, but there is, like, I can't think of any one reason why he would have done that.
Well, so it, I mean, we have to assume that Rennick, who's not Ross, but is Rennick, he tipped off the mafia because he unlatched the chain, but that makes zero sense.
This is what I think. This is not said. I could be wrong about it. I might be misreading the whole thing, but okay. The thing is, there is a really, really interesting story, really interesting movie in the background of this entire movie, and that is the story of Ross hiring Rennick to take his place, right?
Yeah.
Which we don't see any of.
Yeah.
And so the story is this guy, Johnny Ross, leaves the mob, he steals from the mob, and so he's on the run from both the mob, and he claims to be working with the cops, but he's lying to the cops. And so in order to make a clean getaway, he has to hire someone to pretend to be him. So he just gets this used car salesman schlub, Rennick, and he's like, hey, do you want to make some money for you and your pretty wife? You know, I'll put you up in this hotel room. This is the hotel room, so I know where you are. And I'm going to pay you this money to do this. And all you have to do is say you're this name. And I am going to send my associates to, I don't know, give you money or give you next steps of the plan. You just have to make sure that they're welcome in your hotel room. So I think Johnny Ross just gave him instructions to do that.
To open the door.
But it's never said in the movie or anything.
That's the only thing that makes sense, or that he thought that the real Johnny Ross was coming to the door or something, right? So also, like, for the shooting in the hotel room, I read a Roger Ebert review of the year this movie came out, and he said that that was the most brutal scene he had ever seen filmed in a movie. And so,
1968. Oh, boy.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, good times. You know, simpler times when you know, we didn't see legs explode. But, okay, here's another question I had.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. These are professional killers. I think they're kind of polite because they had a shotgun. Like, so it should have been very easy to kill both men in the room.
Yeah.
But did they wound Rennick in a way to just incapacitate him long enough for the real Ross to get away and not testify? Was that kind of the idea?
Why would the mafia want the real Ross to get away?
Yeah, right? They want him dead.
Yeah, the mafia. Yeah, okay.
Also, the mafia not recognize that that wasn't Ross? Also,
see, maybe that's why they hesitated, like, because it has like a ballpark resemblance to him or something.
At the very beginning of the movie, a man named Peter answers a phone and someone on the other end says, I know it's your brother, but you have to do the right thing. And then we never see Peter again.
I know. I was waiting for Peter to show up. Like, where's Peter?
So I think Peter is the member of the mafia who's working with the mafia to track down Ross. That's the only thing I can think of.
Or there's like Peter is in this really weird situation where he's still in the mob, but they're saying, okay, you have to kill your own brother.
Yeah.
So maybe he was kind of in on his brother getting away because he didn't want his brother to flee, but he also didn't want to kill his own brother. So he set something up. So it's like, okay, kill whoever's in this room and say it's done. So he could help him get away.
So by the way, writers and directors of Bullet, these are details that would have been useful.
It would have been useful, but also, like, I mean, is that kind of one of the reasons that makes Bullet sort of an interesting movie? Because we're teased with these background things, and then we get to discuss them. It's kind of like the director saying, here's a book, read the book, let your imagination be your guide, kind of thing.
I do have a theory. Here's what I think the point of the movie is, right? Because there's details that we don't learn, because they're details that the detective never learns. And I think the point of this movie is it's just going for realism, like a real cop movie. So at the end of the movie, the good guys don't win and the mafia is not put away. At the end of the movie, in the course of everything that unfolds, he ends up shooting his star witness. And, you know, he goes home and the next day is another day as a cop, right? Mm. And so I think that's the point of the film, which is odd. And so there's the other point to the film is that he kind of lives in this crazy life. So he has a girlfriend that knows he's a homicide detective and she's fine with it. And then as he goes to the hotel to find the real Mr. Ross, or he thinks he goes to the hotel anyway, and there's all the police cars there, and then she runs right into the crime scene, and I don't know what she thought he was investigating all this time, like like happy murders or or murders of ugly people. I don't know, but like
I think it was murders of ugly people.
Murders of ugly
people. She was like so disappointed. It's like, oh my gosh, that woman. She's almost as beautiful as I am.
And so she gets really upset.
Sewer Frank Bullet.
Yeah, she gets really upset and can't understand why Frank would want to do this job, even though she's known about it all this time. And then so that's what leads to Frank at the end of the movie staring at himself in the mirror while peeing in the sink. So,
she's probably thinking, how can a man in those silk pajamas be involved in such violence?
He has so many great bathrobes in this movie.
Did the police department, did they supply him with that really weird apartment, the modern apartment with like the levers that go all the way down the stairs?
Oh yeah, I don't even.
And the fridge at the top of the stairs.
Like, so they cranked the lever, but I have no idea what it did. Did it do something?
Well, didn't it open the front door? Like someone rings the door, and
it opened the door. Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
wow! So it's not a happy fun slide. I gotta take that off my wards.
No,
I just realized. I'm wondering if we just watched Naked Gun and the Police Squad TV show. I'm wondering if Frank Drebin, they call him Frank Drebin because of Frank Bullet. Is that possible?
I don't know. His name Frank is Bullet. He's a detective. Maybe. His name is Frank Bullet. It's like Johnny, like Shotgun, or.
Yeah.
Did you remember when he goes to the like that club for dinner with his girlfriend kind of at the beginning and like there's the jazz flute playing?
Jazz flute.
I kept thinking like, did Anchorman get that from Bullet? Like I looked all over the internet to see if there was a connection but it seemed just like Anchorman.
It did seem a lot like, I think Anchorman crossed my mind. Every time I hear a flute, I kind of do think, yes, flute, of course. I kind of feel like they may have gotten the musicians who did the soundtrack to Manos, the Hands of Fate, possibly.
Oh, man, I love the kind of the 60s lounge detective music. It is
great. When I say they got the same musicians to Manos, the Hands of Fate, I am not complaining because it's awesome, I think.
So there's one scene in this movie at the morgue where Mr. Rennick is just completely naked, but it's from a distance. You don't really see it. John, you made a comment that said, see translation when I mentioned Johnny Ross naked corpse, and I don't understand what you meant. And I've been.
Okay. So you're questioning that. Okay. What was your comment?
You wrote naked, JR, and it like translated it as if it was like a German word or something.
Oh, really?
Like that.
Yeah, it did. Like not YouTube. Facebook said, do you want like see translation? Like click on that if you want this comment translated. So I think that's why I put it there, just because I wasn't sure if you were aware that it's like one of those comments that said it wasn't in English.
Oh, man. So this is interesting because we've done a couple Steve McQueen movies, and this is only a couple years after Love with the Perfect Stranger, in which Steve McQueen seemed really young. And then this is only a couple years later, and he I don't know anyone who aged faster than Steve McQueen. He died at the age of 50, but he looked like he was like pushing 70, and he looked like he'd been smoking 5 cigarettes at a time his whole life.
Well, wasn't he eating 2 packs a day? Did I say this last time?
I don't know. He died from mesothelioma, and I think one of the theories is when he was in the military, he worked around asbestos a lot when they thought it was good for you. Like, make sure you get your daily ration of asbestos.
Oh gosh!
He died at 50. I had no idea. Really young. We saw him. I think he was in The Blazing Inferno the year he died? It was pretty close. I know he did 2 movies the year he died, which means he was probably making a movie while dying from cancer. But
wow.
Yeah.
Towering Inferno.
Can I just say, Steve McQueen is so good.
He is. I love Steve
McQueen. He's so great, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's good. He's good. He's that's why they call him Bullet. He's good. Josh, I'm dying. Why did you want to watch Bullet?
Well, it was just one of those classic movies that I'd never seen. You know, I mean, that's really the extent of it. Just, you know, look good. And of course, there's that iconic chase scene that they always talk about. And so it was just curiosity, really. So
let's talk about that. Like, name the most famous car chase scenes that you can think of in movies. Because I think of this. I think of the Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers is what I was going to say. Yeah, the French Connection is supposed to be really good.
French Connection. So what makes this one so unique? I think what makes this one unique is Steve McQueen does all his own driving.
Not all.
I think he did a large majority of it.
He did a big part of it.
No, he didn't do the backflip then. He didn't do the backflip.
No. Yeah. he didn't do the backflip. Like, according to IMDb trivia, okay, grain of salt, sorry. Yeah. It's like the thing. So maybe IMDb trivia was lying when it said he didn't do 100% of the driving. I think he did do most of the driving, but there are a few, like, unique things, especially, like, in the POV shots. Apparently, and I didn't go back and watch this, but when the camera, when the rear view mirror is flipped up to show Steve McQueen's face in the driver's seat, that's him. But sometimes it's specifically pointed down because it's the stunt driver. And so you can see it, like, in the switches. So, like, at least you can see in the point of view stuff. Apparently, when he did the reverse spin out, that was him, because he actually made a mistake. Like, he missed the turn, and so he had to do a reverse spin out, and it looks so cool they just kept it in the movie.
Yeah, it's amazing they didn't cause more damage than they did. Like, some of those turns are just incredible.
It's
impressive that he did any of it.
I mean
it's one of those things. He's a car guy, right?
Yeah,
like, it's like his job is acting, but his passion is automotive stuff.
So I think my brother-in-law Steve Snow has a coffee table book that is the cars of Steve McQueen.
Wow.
Well, you know what was cool about that car chase too, though, you know, is just the setting, you know, like flying down those hills in San Francisco.
It's a San Francisco car chase. Yeah. Kind of like, I mean, it was a couple years later. I feel like they're like, okay, you know what? This worked in Bullet. Let's have, like, a bicycle fall down the hills in What's Up, Doc?
Yeah.
And I swear those were the same. It was like I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there are tons of streets in San Francisco with the double hills like that. But I'm like, I'm pretty sure those are the same buildings that they go down, like, that I see in What's Up, Doc 2.
Yeah. So one thing about the car chase scene is his car, the Mustang he drives, I guess that, like, the Bullet Mustang from the movie sold at auction recently for, what, like $3.4 million or something crazy like that. So someone owns the Bullet Mustang.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Anyway, we got to talk about some people who show up in this movie that have been in some of our favorite 70s. Robert Vaughn, back as Chalmers.
yes.
He's a stand-up guy. And then Robert Duvall, and I had no idea, but Robert Duvall averages like 80 movies per year.
Right.
He's in every movie.
It's incredible how prolific he is.
This is like, what, like 5 years after To Kill a Mockingbird, where he's supposed to play like a kid?
Yeah.
And now he's just like a grizzled old
90-year-old
taxi driver. Yeah,
he was old in 1968.
Yeah.
Then I got a question for you guys. What do you do if you get into a taxi and there's a dog right in the back of the car, right above your head?
Oh, you mean like that bobblehead dog?
What did Bullet do?
No, like Robert Duvall has his dog in the back of the.
That was a real dog?
In the back of the. I thought it was his real dog, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know. Now I don't
know. Well, you know I would freak out, but I'd cuddle into a ball and I'd finish the taxi ride. I'd give a mere 25% tip.
Oh, man. Just
driving around with his dog in the cab.
Well, that was a good movie. Good choice, Josh. And that, so that was kind of, that felt, so for me, that Bullet is not a movie that I would have expected. So I'm glad you chose it.
Yes. Good.
I like
good
it.
Surprise.
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Not as surprising as the other two movies. But great surprise.
All right. Well, unless you guys have more Bullet comments, Josh, I think the Lords of Flatbush is all yours, sir.
Okay. So there is not a whole lot really to go over with in terms of plot. And in fact, I was looking around like on the internet, and like this place is called famousfix.com, and under plot, all it says is the plot is about street teenagers in leather jackets from the Flatbush neighborhood. And I was thinking about that, and like, there's really not a whole lot more to add. That's kind of what it is, you know? And like, it really is just these four teenagers who are each probably close to 40 years old. That, it's Stanley, Chico, Wimpy, and Butchie.
Yep.
And, they just, sit around the school, before it starts, like catcalling the girls. And then they go into the, go into class just to and stick it to the teacher.
Catcall the teacher.
Catcall the teacher. Yes. And then like, you know, they chase girls and then they drink, egg creams and then they, so fight many, and then
so many egg cream.
Yes. And then finally at the end, Stanley Sylvester Stallone starts realizing that maybe there's something else out there. And so, there is a very touching scene where he is imagining that he's a pigeon flying over Tokyo, over Tokyo, China. And but Chico can't catch the vision. And then you know, and then it ends with Stallone getting, or Stanley getting married to his girl, who, as I was reading, like about the movie, I guess she wasn't pregnant. I didn't pick that up during the movie. Did either of you?
Well, no, he pointed it out. He said she's too skinny to be pregnant, and you know, he had to.
Well, I thought that was just Stanley being stupid.
No, it was definitely like, Stanley being stupid.
Okay. So anyway, yeah, they get married. And that's it. Like, I mean, so, there's not really a plot.
I think there's a couple threads. I think you've got the Stanley thread where he thinks he gets his girl pregnant, and she kind of gets him to finally marry her. There's some pretty intense ring shopping scenes.
Oh, there is.
Yeah. And then, so another,
there's a ring around your tub.
Another thread is Chico trying to have sex with several people, but he never figures out he's got to take his pants off to do it. And so it's just a lot of messes.
That's a whole thread.
Yeah, that's a whole thread.
Chico's the main character.
I think Chico is the main character. And Josh and I were discussing that we think Chico, when this movie was made, was probably the hero. So
he probably was, right?
So
the director, when he's writing this, it's like him.
Yep. So Henry Winkler,
the director writing himself into the movie.
Henry Winkler's thread is a little less. He's not in it that much, but I think he's the guy who he has the potential to get out of the hood, right? Eddie sees something in Henry Winkler and tries to talk him into doing something better for himself. And then you got Wimpy, who serves no purpose.
Right, right. Wimpy serves no purpose. He kind of, well, I'll get to Wimpy later, but he had his, okay, it's funny because it's like the movie is between Sylvester Stallone and the, and what's his name again? The main guy that we just said. Chico.
John, have you not listened to Chico's song enough times?
No, I haven't. It's like, I feel like the movie pretty much goes back and forth between those two.
Did you guys see that Chico was supposed to be played by Richard Gere?
Yes, but Sylvester Stallone and Richard Gere kept punching each other in the face on set or something.
Right. Every or time in the arms. Sylvester Stallone tells a Hollywood story, I'm like, did you hire someone to make up that story for you? They're always so weird like that. Like, oh, yeah, no, I kept punching Richard Gere, so I knew it wouldn't work. Yeah. It's so weird. But, okay, but the thing is, it's the Lords of Flatbush. You got the two going back and forth with their woman problems. So most of this is, like, woman problems. Not a very good pass of the Bechdel test, this movie.
Chico's problem is that Jane refuses to be sexually assaulted.
Yes. So he's trying to assault kind of the good girl in school. So that's his thing. But like going back, Henry Winkler, he has like his thread is, hey, he's kind of smart and sometimes he does homework. And so there's one scene where it just kind of shows him doing homework. But that's kind of it. It's just like a few seconds. And then Wimpy has the weird thread where he, and I have to ask what happens, he hustles people at pool.
Oh yeah.
And the guy, like, he's like, oh yeah, I, you know, oh, thanks, you know, I don't really want to be hustled. And so he walks out, and then Wimpy's like, I got the Lords of Flatbush on my side. And he snaps his fingers, and Sylvester Stallone comes in and beats up that guy. So the thing is, it's – I get – let me just sum up a little bit. It's fine if you make a movie about a bunch of guys that maybe I don't like. But I also get the feeling that the movie was made by someone who wanted to be a Lord of Flatbush, but they weren't allowed to be.
Yeah.
So they made a movie glorifying the Lords of Flatbush and all the obnoxious things the Lords of Flatbush do.
So that with a
it's someone who likes the Lords of Flatbush.
Yeah. So with Henry Winkler's character, There is that tender moment where Chico fails to sexually assault Jane again, and then he comes over to Butchie's, and there was almost a tender moment, but it went away. And then so Butchie, though, like, who has the most potential, gets hit by a car.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, though.
He might be dead for a minute.
Because I thought, like, okay, he's the Fonz, that's why they got him for this movie, but this movie came first, and he definitely... Yeah. Like
leverage
this role into Happy Days. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we got to talk about leveraging, because we already talked about this, that Sylvester Stallone was allowed to improvise or rewrite his dialogue. Right. Mm. This movie is so uncomfortably similar to Rocky.
Yeah.
It's so close.
And
so,
I don't even know if I want to talk about it.
This is hard because
it's too close to home.
There's a part of me that's like, having watched this, does it make Rocky not as good? I don't think mm-hmm. so. But Rocky, Rocky's a brilliant movie, and this is a awful movie, and there is a razor's edge between the two. Like, it's so close.
He pulled like a John Hughes kind of thing. He's like, oh, okay, you know what? I was almost there. That's what it is, right? It's leveraging. I mean, maybe that's a good thing. You know, Roger Ebert used to say all the time, he's like, why are they remaking classic movies? What they should be doing is remaking movies that didn't work the first time, which seems to be exactly what Sylvester Stallone did.
But Rocky is 100% Stan Lee, except now he's a boxer, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, not 100%.
He's a decent human.
Yeah. But like, even some of the dialogue, like there's the part where his lady's like, don't go fight, you know, we're engaged, and he like came so close to saying, I never asked you to stop being a woman, don't ask me to stop being a man, right? Like, that line was on the tip of his tongue.
He gave her the Rocky talk.
But it's just so.
Is it possible? Okay, how's this? Dangerously close. Is it possible that it is Rocky. Like, this is Rocky Zero. That he didn't pick up the nickname Rocky and moved to Philadelphia until just a couple years later.
So, yeah. I mean, maybe because, like,
this
Chico comes around and calls him Rocky.
He calls him Rocky. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many coincidences that it's hard to ignore them, but I desperately want to.
Yeah, so I mean, Sylvester Stallone saw the Muhammad Ali Wepner boxing match, and he was inspired by the idea that a nobody could, you know, go the distance or whatever. And then, but he needed this character, and this character was kind of kind of him growing up, because he did grow up in Brooklyn, and he had already kind of written this character out, right? Like, Stanley was already a mostly formed character. And I think it was just easy to either it was easy to bring Stanley into the Rocky script, or Stanley really is Sylvester Stallone and he's just writing himself again. So I don't know. Either way,
this is a side question, but how does Sylvester Stallone have the clout to be able to do that? It's like, okay, everybody else can do their thing, but I'm writing my own character.
Yeah, I don't know. If they're paying him in shirts, then why is anyone listening to him?
Yeah. No, it's so weird. I mean, a lot of times, I mean, I hear all Sylvester Stallone tell these stories, and I'm like, I don't believe you, Sylvester Stallone. But it's in the credits. Like, for whatever reason, even though he was in no other movies before this, he's in the credits as, you know, additional dialogue. So yeah. Is it possible that he like he was just ensconced in the production. They didn't have time or money to hire anybody else. And they're like, well, he's saying his own lines. He's disregarding the lines we wrote, so I guess we have to write him in the credits.
So here's my theory with this, because there's several
he was just disregarding the lines.
So because there's several scenes in this movie where they like make mistakes, but they just keep going, and I think there just wasn't the budget to do lots of takes, and so I think Sylvester Stallone just does his thing, and they're not going to reshoot because they can't afford the film. And so I don't know, but so I read an interview with Sylvester Stallone right after Rocky came out and was a success, and he talked about the writing process, and they mentioned the Lords of Flatbush a little bit, but he said that he always thought at that point in his career he thought of himself as a writer first and then actor later. By the way, he was previewing his next major hit, which was going to be Paradise Alley.
Did you notice like how many of the same actors are in Paradise Alley?
Yeah.
Like he literally just like moved the cast from Flatbush over to Paradise Alley.
Oh man. So it is interesting. And I think what you said, John, makes a lot of sense that Sylvester Stallone had this story inside him, and he had Rocky kind of germinating, at least the character, right? And he got like a rough draft of it out in the Lords of Flatbush, and then he got another chance. He got another chance to try again and to improve it, right?
Yeah,
because it is interesting, because this is objectively a really bad movie, and Rocky is at least a top 10, maybe top 5 movie for me. I think it's one of the most brilliant movies ever made, and these two movies are so similar. So,
I would have appreciated a little bit more Stanley in Rocky, now that you mention it. just because I think Rocky is really good. Someone was talking about Rocky. I was listening to a podcast. They were talking about Rocky, and they hit on something that I think kind of always bothered me about Rocky. And it's kind of Sylvester Stallone's fault. And it doesn't make any sense because he wrote this guy, and I feel like he cares about this guy. But I kind of feel like Sylvester Stallone plays Rocky less with heart and more with some kind of like mental incapacity right from the very beginning. You know?
I don't know. So what was interesting to me though, at the end of the imagination pigeon scene, was as Chico was leaving. And Sylvester said, "I should have broke your thumb, Chico." And
oh yeah, there it is.
Raw motion.
So fair to say that Polly is Chico.
Oh man! By the way, there's an alternate poster for this movie where it's Sylvester Stallone. Stanley and Franny getting married. Like that was the pitch of this alternate poster, that this is the story of Stanley getting married.
Like the sort of coming of age, like family drama sort of thing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And then his last name.
So anyway,
Sylvester Stallone's so good with names. His last name is Sweet. It's Stanley Sweet.
It is Stanley Sweet. Okay. I was serious about that whole like Rocky prequel thing. I'm like, could his last name be Balboa? Could it be Stanley Balboa?
Oh my god.
Rocky Marciano. Because that's another thing about Rocky that I think is kind of funny. Like, he actually went with the name Rocky, even though there isn't just one other famous boxer named Rocky. There are like a few. So it kind of, I feel like it kind of dilutes the name a little bit.
But I love
– oh, boy.
And I want to think that Sylvester Stallone like had this influence, because I think Sylvester Stallone's good at character development and details. I love the detail that – when Stanley makes love, he cries. Such a sensitive lover, that Stanley. Just weeping.
Imagine what Stallone
post-coital weeping.
In his office. He's that character out.
He's knocking the books out of schoolgirls' like hands all day. He's harassing the teacher. He's punching men for no reason.
But then there's a child in her arms.
It all, like, yeah, all that sensitivity is built up right in the act of lovemaking, to the point where it's like, okay, I have to cry because it's the only time I can cry because I'm too busy being a Flatbush Lord.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if you caught it on their jacket, where it says Lords, they have an apostrophe. And
yes,
so the trivia says it's intentional to show that they're stupid, right? That they can't do grammar. But I think maybe they made the jackets and it was a mistake. And they're like, well, we can't afford new jackets. So, but
see, if they should have been brave enough to call the movie Lords spelled with an apostrophe.
So there's several scenes in this movie where there's like a pause and it just feels like they're waiting for someone to remember their line. And again, I just feel like they just can't afford to cut and shoot the scene again. And so, man, I don't know.
I mean, okay, that's a next level. That's next level low budget. When it's like, okay, we can't afford to shoot the scene, but not only that, we can't even afford to edit the film.
Keep rolling.
Keep rolling.
Keep rolling.
Man, so I will say, because Josh, you have given us a couple really bad movies that have not been fun to watch. At least this was fun. So for me,
fun. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was a little distressing in a couple of places, but it was fun. A couple of things real quick. Did you notice on IMDb that this movie is under the genre of romance?
So I was thinking, because John, when we were in high school, you had that video from like produced by the Navy on how to be a gentleman, but the first half of the video was like it was the negative example, right?
Yeah.
And like this entire movie is the negative example of how to be a gentleman.
Yeah.
And then one other thing that I found out as I was just scouring the internet the other day was that the guy who plays Chico, Perry King is his name. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you guys ever heard, like, they did like this original, like a radio show of all the Star Wars movies. Like, this was probably like back in the 80s. And anyway, Chico was Han Solo in that.
Oh, no way.
So Perry,
that's funny. I have heard of the radio show.
The actor's name is Perry King, right?
Yeah.
So
and like it had a lot of the Star Wars, like it had Anthony Daniels in it and like some other actual like actors from the Star Wars movie, but no Harrison Ford. It was Perry King.
Does it just feel like at this era in Hollywood there were only like 30 actors doing movies and they all hung out and knew each other?
But
it's IMDb trivia, but apparently when the people in charge of Rocky had decided to let Rocky play Rocky and they had to pitch it to the producers or to the studio, they showed the Lords of Flatbush and the producers got really excited because they thought that Sylvester Stallone was Perry King. I don't know why they would be so stoked for Chico to be their boxer.
Well, that is funny because I mean Sylvester Stallone's the one punching everybody.
Yeah, and so there is one big fight in this movie, and it's when they go to beat up the guy that Jane actually likes because he isn't trying to assault her all the time.
Hey, and, preppy scum.
Yeah, and so they go and they grapple on the ground for about 10 seconds, and then after that, I think the Lords of Flatbush are just run off the field.
They're run off because they did it in front of the football team.
Yep.
The entire team chases them away.
Into the car.
When there was no punching. It was just grappling on the ground.
They're ahead of their times. They're doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
But I don't think any of the Lords of Flatbush know how to punch faces. They only know how to punch shoulder.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite scenes. Yeah.
Out of control friendship punching in the shoulder fight.
Just punching until Stanley started to cry.
But you know what made that better? Everyone was able to calm down with a couple of egg creams.
That's the only thing that's kept him in Flatbush all those years are the egg creams.
That's another thing I was going to look up. What's an egg cream? It's Is it like a cream soda?
It's like a milkshake, sort of.
It's like an egg-based drink that has like carbonated like water in it and stuff. Like sounds horrible.
Right. It's like Shasta yolk flavored.
It's carbonated eggnog or something.
It is. It's like eggs and milk and like seltzer water.
Okay. Yeah, that tracks. for the 50s. Yeah, I have a feeling that that the Heartland was drinking a drink composed of eggs and milk and seltzer.
Well, listen, I appreciate you guys watching with me one of the seminal love stories of our time.
No, I'm actually really happy because that's a movie that I've been aware of for a really long time and haven't had an excuse to watch it. So I'm glad we did.
Yeah, I'd always wanted to see it. And like, do you remember like when I came on to announce the movies and like I told you like someone had described this movie to me as Stallone and the Fonz just being sweet for 90 minutes? Like, I little did I know how accurate that plot synopsis was. That's like all they did.
Oh, man.
Sorry, I'm on a spiral on the internet right now. I just did a Google search for egg cream drink, and you know how Google does the things like the questions, like what is in the egg cream drink? What is the egg cream drink made from? And it pops up. It says milk, carbonated water, and flavored syrup. It doesn't say eggs anywhere, which I think is weird. And then I scrolled way down. It says who drinks egg cream. I clicked on it. It just says Jews.
Well, the Fonz, that's where you get it.
Yeah, I know Henry Winkler.
Oh, man. Oh, okay.
So I don't know. I mean, yeah. So I want to try it now because, I'll take a latke. I'll take a bagel. I'll take all that stuff. Okay. What do you guys think? Anything else? Lords of Flatbush?
I think
who's your favorite lord?
Was that going to be an award? I can't remember if that was going to be an award. The best and worst lord.
I thought that was an award.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Sorry. Don't answer that.
Yeah.
Okay, Casa de mi Padre, Roy, is that you?
Yeah, it is.
Go for it.
Okay, let me catch up here because
can I just preempt your criticism by saying that I love this movie?
Did you?
Yeah. Yes. You can preempt that. That's I fine. Did. Good to know.
Okay.
Good, sharpening my knives now.
But you hadn't seen it before, right, Josh?
I hadn't seen it before, no.
Yeah, but you better not have seen it.
I was there were parts of this where I was just laugh out loud at midnight. Like, it was, I loved it. Okay, so go ahead. So,
it's a good late nighter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I think that, that helps a lot, I think.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Casa de mi Padre is a Will Ferrell movie. This is, I think, written by the same people that did The Anchorman and it was like the series of mediocre man movies that he was doing or whatever, right?
Mm.
And but this one is entirely in Spanish, and the plot is today in Mexico. His name is Armando, and he has a father and he has a brother, Raul, and and he just rustles the cattle, right? And he doesn't have time for women. Not because he doesn't like women, but because he hasn't found a woman who loves the earth like he does. Right. And so he goes home and his father hates him, thinks he's stupid. Raul has come back from wherever, and we learn that Raul is now doing the drug selling, which puts Raul straight in the crosshairs of La Onza, who is the sweetest two Canadian slim cigarette at a time smoker you've ever seen. So, but Raul comes home and he has a new fiance who is Sonia. Sonia goes on a horse ride with Armando, and it gets pretty tense because Armando demands to know if Sonia is really in love with Raul, and she will never answer that question. And I think maybe she's touched because I think when they're all together at the house, someone asks, is it the father that brings up that Armando doesn't like girls? And Armando, I think, does he sing a song
and then
about
Armando's dumb?
Yeah, and then he's dumb. Yeah. Armando sings a song about the woman that he will love because she'll love the earth, and I think she's really touched. So there's a scene where she gets on the horse and she kind of gets like halfway on, like her stomach is on the saddle, and Will Ferrell just backs off like, well, that's good enough. So they go for a ride, and I think he takes her to the pool where he murdered his own mother as a child. And I'm trying to remember what happens from here, but I know that Armando's not killed at this point. There's kind of an empty spot here for me.
Yeah, he's banished.
He's
banished?
Why is he banished?
Doesn't Armando get killed at the secret spot where he takes Sonya though?
Yes. So I think he goes back to the bar where he finds out that Raul and La Onza. I think he's already discovered that La Onza is doing drugs, right? Like he's selling the drugs in their area, and so he learns that his brother is also in the drug trade. And I at one point he takes Sonya back to that beautiful pool. I think Sonya's there because she's going to drown herself.
Oh, that's right.
Right? Yeah. She doesn't want to marry Raul. She's just going to drown herself. And he stops her from drowning herself. And we see Hinders galore. And then he's murdered. I want to say, the squib action in this movie is pretty good. Like, there's some good squib stuff going on. He's killed. He's brought back to life by the albino cougar.
Albino killer.
El Gato Blanco.
Yeah, also known as La Onza, I think. They're like... for some reason, the drug dealer and the white cougar are both La Onza.
Right.
Well, La Onza in Spanish is like the leopard.
Oh, okay.
The snow leopard. Yeah.
Is that okay.
The puma.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be the white puma.
So I will say, John, you're not going to get this, but in college football, there's the BYU Cougars and there's the Houston Cougars, and the Houston Cougar looks happy and fat, and it's a jolly fat cougar, and that's what this one looks like. It looks like the Houston Cougar. but somehow it brings him back to life, and there's a big Bengal tiger cougar fight, which we don't get to see because the tigers got into the cocaine. So we don't get to see that fight, but we do get to see La Onza dragging Will Ferrell's like doll body off the off the set. So somehow he's brought back to life, but in the meantime the wedding happens, and between Raul and Sonya, but the bad guys come and they shoot everyone except for Raul and Sonya. And
that all happens before Armando dies.
Does it? Okay. My timeline's kind of messed up here. But it's so wonderful because a bunch of people are murdered and the father is shot up. And as he's dying at the wedding, he said, "This is your brother Armando. It's got his fingerprints all over it." Like, he's just convinced that Armando has murdered the family during the wedding. Anyway, yeah, you're right, because I think Will Ferrell comes back and his father says how sorry he is, right, before he dies. So whatever, I'm getting these out of order. The point is that Raul is taking his gang and he's going to go get Sonya back from La Onza. And they show up, and they all get shot up pretty good, and including Raul, who, as he's dying, is trying to finish off his whiskey or whatever he's got.
Yeah.
And then Will Ferrell and Sonya, they go in, and they manage together, with the power of love, to defeat La Onza. And that's the movie. Yeah.
That's
wonderful.
That's it. It's interesting. It's... okay. It was funny.
Also, Nick Offerman's in it.
Nick Offerman's in it. He plays the bad CIA guy, right?
Yeah. He is so freaking funny. Oh, my gosh.
You love his accent? His, zero-effort Spanish accent?
it is the best, yeah.
purposely, I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of me trying to sound, he's gonna emphasize the United States accent in his Spanish.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, and it's done so well. If you speak Spanish, you realize that he's what he's doing is he's just translating literally word for word things he knows in English into Spanish, and so it doesn't make real sense in Spanish, but he's just doing it in English. And oh my gosh, it's so funny, man. So
at the end, Nick Offerman is going to kill Armando, but the other agent shoots Nick Offerman and says, "Not all Americans are bad or evil." And he says, "Not all Mexicans are drug dealers or cartels or whatever." And that's where they came to an understanding. But I think Nick Offerman at the end, then he says, well, looks like we have a Mexican standoff, which isn't true. Right? Don't you need three people for a Mexican standoff?
Yeah, I think that's a joke, but it's kind of a weird joke because whoever talks about Mexican standoffs, only people who have movie podcasts talk about Mexican standoffs. So it's not I don't think it's like a ha ha joke. It's just a sort of semi background chuckle joke that Nick Offerman doesn't know. Even though it is a Mexican standoff, though, because they're standing off in Mexico.
Well, there you go.
So he's not really wrong, but it's just not the term Mexican standoff. Yeah.
Also, I think at one point in that final scene, before Raul goes into battle, he snorts dirt. Yes. I think he does a line of dirt.
Okay, so anyway, Casa de Mapod is funnier than I thought. It was a little bit more airplane-y than I thought it would be, which is good because I do like that kind of stuff. But that has a lot to live up to because, I mean, with Airplane, I'm kind of like, okay, I get what they're doing here, and it's its own movie, and they're contained within the movie. I do – whenever someone tries to emulate that, and I got this a little bit, I kind of don't like when a movie is speaking to me and it's saying, hey, we're laughing with you. Hey, we're in on the joke, you know. And I can't really explain, like, what it is, like specific choices that make me think that. It's like, you know, like, hey, just stop telling me you're in on the joke. Just be in on the joke, you know?
Yeah.
Which I don't know. That's kind of a weird, and this is just a weird subjective thing, but I kind of feel like Casa de Mi Padre was just a little too much like that. But okay, here's my real criticism. Okay. And first of all, you know what? I don't hate the movie because it made me laugh. And that's the whole point. If it makes you laugh, whatever. I'll make sure to mention a few things that I thought were funny, you know, some of the obvious goofs that they did, like with the little Mexican town, little miniatures and everything, you know, all that stuff.
Or the weird edits.
I like all of that stuff. But there's a weird thing, and I think it might, you know, who cares that when this was made 10 years ago, but maybe looking at it now, there's just this weird thing where it's like you get a bunch of, you know, Latin American actors to be in every role except for one role where it's just Will Ferrell, and it's Will Ferrell being Will Ferrell. And so it just seems – and it's not his fault because he didn't write the movie. He didn't direct the movie. But I will blame him because I kind of don't like Will Ferrell. It just seems like as the main character, he is making fun of Mexico.
So I was going to ask, do you feel the same way about Nacho Libre? Because when I watch Nacho Libre, I think it's so funny, and I feel so guilty because I also feel like it's making fun of Mexico.
The question is moot.
Okay.
Well,
because I haven't seen Nacho Libre, you know that. Yeah.
It's different than Nacho Libre, and it's different in the sense that like the director is a Mexican guy, and you know, and like everybody, like you said, but Will Ferrell and Nick Offerman are from Mexico, and it's not satirizing Mexico. It's more specific. It's satirizing like the Mexican telenovela. You know, and, you know, and so that Will Ferrell's role is the joke, you know, and it's like, it's more, I didn't see it as him, the American, making fun of Mexico. Like he was the comic relief for all the Mexicans who were watching this, you know, because it released, you know, and in fact, I think it released in Mexico. I thought I read that. But like, you know, and I don't know if you guys have ever like, I don't know if you saw this in Brazil at all, JR, with like the telenovelas, but man, you know, I mean, I'm quite familiar with a lot of these, and it is super funny. it is like a super funny satire of that.
So the only telenovela I'm aware of is the one on that one episode of Psych, where Sean Spencer's in the telenovela. But so I am familiar with the concept, and I think I understand that perspective, right? The joke is that he's this kind of out of place character. And so, I mean, he played it exactly how I thought he would, right? He plays it really earnestly, and that's the humor in it.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't like a cultural appropriation or something
so
like that.
So let me ask then again, how do you feel about Nacho Libre, Josh? Cause I think that movie is so funny, and I feel guilty.
Yeah. I love Nacho Libre, you know, I guess I understand the criticism, you know, and I think part of the criticism with Nacho Libre, though, is that they went and found, you know, like all the weirdest looking Mexicans they could find, you know, and like that was, you know, and this was kind of like making fun of that in
that's
a way.
A Jared Hess staple. That's always bugged me about him. I feel like he tends to, ever since Napoleon Dynamite, like one of his favorite things to do is laugh at his own characters.
Yeah.
Well, you should. And so, like, Gentleman Broncos, then. So.
Oh my gosh, that's the worst case. Yeah, you're. Oh gosh, no one out there vote for Gentleman Broncos. Oh crap, I've cursed us.
Really? Actually, there's parts of that movie that I laugh so hard at.
Oh,
like when the snake poops on the guy's shirt.
No, you guys. No, I'm having a panic attack right now. I can't watch Gentleman Broncos. I can't do it.
What about the vomit kiss?
Oh my gosh! Gentleman Broncos. It's assaultive to me.
Or please rub the lotion on my hands.
Oh man, no, I can't do it.
No mammo cannons for you or yeast lords.
Yeah. Oh yeah, John. I think you may have just sealed your fate, though.
You stole my nads.
Oh gosh, Gentleman Broncos.
Okay. That show was really bad.
It was. It was really, really bad.
Yeah. Man. Well, okay, let me go back to okay, here's another thing. It's like, okay, I get it, you know, they're laughing with, and the Will Ferrell character is supposed to be sort of the buffoon, and everybody else, you know, there are all these great actors, and they are definitely in on it, you know, and they're having a great time. Yeah. And they're having fun. There's something about Will Ferrell's blank goofy face where it's just Will Ferrell coasting in as Will Ferrell. Mm. And he did this also with did you guys see that Eurovision movie?
Yeah.
Yes.
I thought the exact same thing. Like, Rachel McAdams was so committed.
She's really
and
good
so everything,
movie.
But Will Ferrell just ferreled it up, and it's just like, it's so Will, like, it's always so Will Ferrell in all these things.
Well, but you know what? I think I would push back a little bit on that, John, because, like, he definitely did not mail it in. He went and learned Spanish. You know, I mean, if you're, you know, I mean, the effort was there, you know, I mean, I think for me, yeah, I mean, I thought he was all in. And like,
I appreciate that he, you know, had a coach to help him with the Spanish, but he just, like, his method, I guess, it's just me. I don't like it because I feel like he's trading in on that blank stare that he's had ever since Saturday Night Live, you know?
Well, I think they wanted him to be Will Ferrell, though. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's – well, I'm sure why they wanted him in the movie.
Then I will blame them for that because that was a bad choice.
This was his opportunity to break out into – this could have been his Man on the Moon or Truman Show.
Actually, you know what? That reminds me, Josh, because I couldn't forget to ask you about this. But have you been watching Winning Time on HBO by any chance? Because it seems like something you would watch.
You know, I don't because I don't have HBO Max, but I'm intrigued by it.
Steal a car. There was actually – Winning Time was actually what broke up Will Ferrell and Adam McKay because from what I understand, Will Ferrell kind of assumed that Adam McKay would cast him as Dr. Buss, you know, the Lakers owner. Yeah, and which, you know – he gave the part to John C. Reilly, you know, which is kind of funny because John C. Reilly, Will Ferrell's stepbrothers, the two of them,
right.
You know. It's crazy. I would like you to watch Winning Time and tell me what you would think of if, like, Will Ferrell was in instead of John C. Reilly. I kind of appreciate that they had a breakup myself. Because obviously I'm making no secret about it. I'm not as big a fan of Will Ferrell as I used to be.
Well, I can't imagine Will Ferrell, you know, like doing justice to Jerry Buss. You know what I mean? Like, I mean,
right.
That seems incongruous, but yes. Yeah, so, well, I would love to see that. Actually, it does look kind of fun.
Huh. So, you guys have got me thinking kind of on a different tangent because we're talking about these kind of comedies, and I now wonder if the movie Masterminds is a detective movie.
Oh, that's something.
And
I guess it is kind of.
How about Logan Lucky? Is Logan Lucky a detective movie with Hilary Swank?
If Logan Lucky, is that Josh Hartnett?
No, Logan Lucky.
No, that's Lucky Slevin.
It's no yeah. Logan. Okay. Logan Lucky has Adam Driver and Channing Tatum.
Okay. And Hilary Swank. I think anybody who detects anything in a movie,
is a
so pretty much uses their senses, I think that can be considered a detective movie.
I think Logan Lucky definitely counts.
Yeah. No, that's fine. Everybody and listening, keep track of what we say, our detective movies. That will be very important at a later date. So we'll get there. I have one more thing to say about Casa de Mi Padre before we move on. And that is the white cat. What's his name?
El Gato Blanco.
El Gato Blanco. Josh, I just have to bring this up again because have you found the videotape of you and Ryan Ingeman when you spray holy water on Ryan Ingeman and he turns into a lion? Because that's what I thought that cat looked like. Padre, with his big lion paw.
I would give anything to find that footage. I don't know where it's at.
Oh my gosh, that was my favorite video of I think 1988. Whenever that was.
Oh gosh, you got a good memory, John. Well, I'll tell you one thing that I read about this movie, that Will Ferrell actually had to do it out of contractual obligation.
I read that too. That was, I'm like, is he part of the old 50s MGM movie system?
Like, can you imagine though, you're an actor and like they come to you and they say, all right, sorry, you're going to have to do a movie in another language. And sorry, you have to learn obligated. Yeah. Like, so anyway, I thought that was funny. But anyway, I liked it. I liked it quite a bit.
All right. Well, is that all we have to say about that? Are you guys ready for some fancy awards?
Fancy awards.
Oh, wait. Oh, wait. What about what about the cigarette that Armando keeps trying to make? Did you notice that? And he gives it to Launce at the end, and it's just like just loose tobacco falling out of it.
It like, looks like a silly straw.
It's just paper.
What about the Gael Garcia Bernal's like double cigarette scene?
Yeah, the two Canadian slims.
He was so cool. Like, that was amazing.
Like, 8 inches long each cigarette.
Man. Okay, no. A lot of funny parts. I giggled a lot. I giggled a lot. So, that's great. Okay. Oh, before we move on, though, Roy, we should do contact information.
And read an email.
Yeah, we were going to do that earlier.
We got an email. Hey, so this just we got several emails. But we only have time to read one.
Yeah.
So I've chosen an email to read. I'm trying, John. So from Sebastian Grober. Sorry that we didn't notice this until now. We got a little lazy.
Sebastian, you're not in the Facebook group, so this is very fresh.
Join us on Facebook so you can actually make John watch Gentlemen Broncos. So Sebastian says, you guys need to watch the best Titanic-related show not mentioned in your last pod. You need to watch the episode Sinking Ship, which is the last episode of Season 4 of News Radio. And then he says, later, dudes. And I will say, I've never seen a single episode of News Radio, which is weird because it's Phil Hartman and what's his head from Kids in the Hall?
Joe Rogan. And you love Joe Rogan.
Well, yeah, then Joe Rogan. But it seems like I would like News Radio, but I've never seen it. And I looked it up, and I don't think it's free. I'd have to rent that episode. But are you familiar with this episode, John?
No, I'm not familiar with that episode. I would love to see it. Maybe it's on YouTube or something, or maybe I'll probably go find the DVDs at the library.
There you go.
I was going to say, that would be good.
You can rent the episode for 99 cents on Apple TV, but yeah, your library has everything. So
I haven't seen, I've seen like, I don't know, like 10 episodes of News Radio, but it's always like a show that I've been like, I want to watch the whole show.
Yeah.
You know, I've always kind of liked, I've always liked it.
Yeah. Well, I would say like of all like the celebrities that I feel like we lost way too early, Phil Hartman is way at the top of that list.
Oh yeah. Yes. Gosh, dang it.
No, it was a sweet murder suicide. I guess if you're going to go out early, might as well go out and murder suicide.
Go with gusto.
Yeah.
Did you guys, and I didn't tell you this, but I received an email that was directed to Yours, Mine, and Theirs.
Ooh.
No. What?
Yeah.
I don't know how that's the case, but go ahead.
I don't know how we'll have time to read yet another email, but yeah, go ahead.
So this one, it doesn't say where this person is from, but his name is You're Invited, and it says, congrats, You're Invited. Find out if you've been pre-approved for a Capital One credit card.
Oh, wow. Hmm.
We could probably use that as an expense account for the podcast.
So, hey, congratulations.
That's pretty good. Well, okay. Well, I want to thank both of you then for checking in with us. And hopefully we'll see both Sebastian and Capital One on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
All right. Awards.
Wait. Do you want to do contact info?
Contact information. Yeah. John, you're best at that.
Okay.
I assign
you. First of all, leave us a voicemail at 801-896-4542. That's your fastest, safest way on the podcast. I'll just say really quick. Sorry. This is a tangent, but we are going to do, and we're going to announce this slightly later in the podcast, we're going to have our debate for which three detective movies we watch at our live event in July. And this is a great opportunity for you to leave us a message on the phone, 801-896-4542. If nothing else, you know, leave us an argument for whatever detective movie you want us to watch. We will guarantee to play your argument when it comes down to it. So do that. In the meantime, we've already mentioned the Facebook group. If you're on Facebook and you know how Facebook works and you haven't quit it in disgust, go ahead and do a search for Yours, Mine, and Theirs. It pops up really fast, and you can join the group. And we're very liberal about who we allow to join the group, even though it has bitten us before with people who post random things that don't make any sense. And you can too. Go ahead and give us an email at yoursminetheirspodcast@gmail.com. We will read your email, even though we get tons of them.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And go ahead and go to the blog at yoursminetheirspodcast.blogspot.com. From there, you can directly download all MP3s and subscribe. There's a subscribe button, you know, to iTunes and Spotify, etc. Speaking of, go to Spotify, give us 5 stars or 5 thumbs or 5 moons or whatever they do over at Spotify, 5 Rogans probably. make sure you give us positive stuff over at Spotify so that, you know, that'll help us out. That'll help other people become a part of the community. Go to Apple Podcasts, iTunes, whatever they call it now. Give us 5 stars there. That's the most important thing you can possibly do for yourself, for us, and for your country. So anyway,
very good.
That is contact information.
Hey, Josh was recently on a podcast with our favorite Corseses. Cortezes. So, Josh, would you like to plug?
Yeah, sure.
So, Sean Cortese, who has been on here before talking about Predator with you guys,
he was
on a really good podcast called The Extraordinary Us, and talks about like his kind of about addiction issues and kind of his own story there, and it's really pretty good, really compelling. Really? So, check it out. Yeah,
cool.
And you should know this, too. This is Sean Cortese, contributor to the show, was just cast in the new Power Rangers movie.
Oh, boy.
That's awesome. What?
Congratulations.
None of that made any sense. There's a new Power Rangers movie, and he was cast in it as a gaffer?
No, he was cast in it as, like, he's the bully in what I mean – That was so he's the bully in the new Power Rangers movie.
Oh, man.
Whenever that comes up.
Okay. I'll be there. I wasn't planning on watching it. I will be there for Sean.
Tell him to base his character off of Wimpy, the Lord of Flatbush.
I will.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, folks. Let's get down to business. The best title, Josh.
Best title, Bullet.
It's simple. It's economical. John?
Simple and economical.
All right. Well, I have to go with Casa de Mi Padre again by default because Bullet is spelled wrong. How embarrassing. And also Lords of Flatbush is spelled wrong because they didn't put the apostrophe in the title.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we're diversified. I'm choosing the Lords of Flatbush because it sounds really awful. But it pretty much is it's one of the most descriptive titles for what a movie really is. So there you go. Best movie poster, John.
Casa de Mi Padre, specifically for Sonia's, great, just melodramatic pose up on top of, Will Ferrell there.
And lots of yellow.
Mm. Yep.
All right, Josh.
Yeah. I went with Casa de Mi Padre too. Oh my gosh, I liked it a lot and I liked the eagle with the snake in its mouth up in the corner.
I don't know what's wrong here, but it's the Lords of Flatbush, okay?
Just a bunch of buddies.
All of my awards are like the Lords of Flatbush. Okay, all right.
Like the end credits of Lords of Flatbush, where it's just like, hey, here's a scrapbook of all the times you harassed
me. Oh, we didn't talk
that
about
was the
that.
Best part. I can't believe we didn't talk
okay,
about that.
Okay, so I have some awards, so we'll talk about it.
Okay, good.
Okay. Okay, we're just going to launch right into best tagline and alternate tagline, and Josh, I'll let you do it. So give your favorite and then your alternates.
Okay, so for me, the best tagline, there was an alternate tagline there for the Lords of Flatbush, and there was one that said, Stanley had a leather jacket and Franny had acne. In 1958, they found each other.
Yeah, that's the alternate wedding poster, right?
She looked pretty clear to me. Yeah.
And so
that is not what that movie is about. It's not even close. Okay.
Not about Franny's acne. So my fake tagline. Do you want me to do them all?
Yeah.
Okay, so for Lords of Flatbush, it was, hey, Stanley, you comb your hair with a pork chop? And then Casa de mi Padre, the alternate tagline was, ¿Quién es más macho, Armando o la onza?
Oh, good. That's good.
And for Bullet, it is, you may outrun a Mustang, but you will never outrun Bullet's turtleneck.
Wow.
Oh, man. That's a great turtleneck. That's a power turtleneck. All right.
That was.
All right, John, give me your taglines.
All right. The winning tagline that's an actual tagline, and it won because it was the only one I could read that was legible enough for me on the posters. And it was 1958 when making love meant, quote, making out.
I think that tagline is about Chico not understanding how it works.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay, tagline for Bullet. His name, Bullet. His job, cop. His tool, gun. His other tools, more bullets. All right, Lords of Flatbush tag. Sorry, I just have to collect myself because I love that tagline I just said. That was me. Okay. Lords of Flatbush. They laugh when they taunt girls. They cry when they make love. They jizz their pants on dates. Raise your egg creams. They're the Lords of Flatbush. Okay. Casa de mi Padre tagline. Mexico es el bueno estico.
All right. So my favorite tagline is, when was the last time someone gave you a hickey? From the Lords of Flatbush. Yeah. But so let's see. From Bullet, I've got Bullet, stay off his side of the street. The Lords of Flatbush, dare to love again, Chico. Casa de mi Padre, el poder del amor lo vence todo. And so, all right then, John, your favorite opening credits.
Okay, opening credits. Bullet. They had like the letters that were like the letters, they weren't black, they weren't white, they were just like another scene in the movie, and they just kind of zoomed in and they did these weird transitions. I was like, oh, this is trippy. And the jazz, come on, the jazz.
A lot of jazz.
All right, well, yeah. Josh, what's your favorite opening credits?
So mine was Bullet as well, and it kind of reminded me of the old Bohemian Rhapsody video, you know, where it's like all these like people's faces on a black screen. Like, I kind of liked it.
I can't believe you guys didn't choose Casa de mi Padre. That was a nuts opening credits.
It was pretty great. It was like the, you know, it was like the Mexican James Bond sort of.
Yeah, credits. And basically it was just Christina Aguilera's red lips singing Casa de mi Padre, which was pretty great.
It was really cool. I watched Bullet beforehand, and I kind of decided when I watched the Bullet credits, I'm like, oh, I love these credits. Okay. So it was kind of – it was anchoring bias, as you all say.
Yeah.
Hey, do you guys know what the one Academy Award Casa de mi Padre was nominated for?
Best actor?
Costumes?
No. Best original song. That one.
From Casa de mi Padre?
Oh, wow. Okay, that makes sense. Of course, I should have realized that. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, John, what's your favorite technology?
Favorite technology? The lever at the top of Bullet Stairs that like latches open the door.
Did it actually like move a giant rod that like?
Yeah. it like raised a portcullis like between the door and the yeah.
All right, Josh. What about you? What's your technology?
It was definitely the 3,000-pound telecopier.
Yep, the from telecopier.
Bullet. Oh, the telecopier. Oh no, I should have picked that because it was a fax machine, yeah. Right? They didn't know what it was called. Even
we sat yeah. there and waited for 15 minutes as the fax slowly came in to the telecopier. Yeah. All right. Well, Josh, what's your favorite name?
My favorite name.
Uh-huh.
So my favorite name is it's Agent Parker, but it's because he introduces himself as Me Llamo S. Parker.
All right, John, what about you?
I want to take this opportunity. There were about 5 podcasts ago, and I still wake up screaming about this. I neglected to pick Sergeant Taker Away is the best name, when that was obviously the best name. I think I mentioned it on our Star Trek podcast, but I didn't mention it on this podcast, so I just want to apologize to everybody and also especially apologize to Sergeant Taker Away because that was the best name. Okay, but this podcast, I'm going to have to go with Franny Malenkanico. Malenkanico, yeah.
All right. You mean early Adrian, right? So
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, well, I went with Stanley Sweet. It one in the line of many great names like Zeke Da Silva. And anyway. All right, fine, whatever. Food, John, go.
Okay, honorable mention to the egg creams, of course, but I'm going to have to go with Bullet's girlfriend when she's back at her apartment, at their apartment. She seems to be eating just a bowl of Totino's pizza rolls.
All right, Josh, what do you got?
So mine is again, yeah, runner up egg creams, but from Bullet, when Steve McQueen goes grocery shopping and he gets like 6 TV dinners and an onion.
That's nice. Oh, yeah, so, you just microwave the onion and just drizzle onion the TV dinners. The onion really spices those dinners up.
So my honorable mention is a dozen Hungry Man TV dinners. And I'm giving the award to the egg creams. I've had one. They're tasty.
Oh, okay.
You've had one?
Yeah, there is a place in Maryland called Cheeburger Cheeburger, and they sold egg creams. By golly,
oh,
I had one.
Oh, nice.
So wow. Eggy. Nice, okay. Nice chunks of egg. So, ooh. All right then, Josh, what's your favorite outfit?
Recommended by your rabbi, I'm guessing.
So my favorite outfit, gosh, I had so many on this one. I appreciate Steve McQueen's assortment of turtlenecks. I liked Armando's loincloth in the vision he has, but I think my winner has to be Stanley's wedding suit with the shirt unbuttoned all the way to the belt. Showing up to his wedding, unbuttoned to the belt.
Oh, all right. John, what do you got?
Okay, lots of I'm not sure if this is like one of the things he was paid in, but one of Stanley's t-shirts specifically is I believe it was like 90% oil spill. Like it's just really like oily. And when I say oily, I don't mean like olive oily. I mean like motor oily.
It's just
black. It's just this black oil spill on his chest.
It's used as a rag at the auto shop and then he just puts it on.
Yeah. Fair to say Lords of Flatbush is the oiliest movie you guys have ever had on the show.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. So I'm going to say Stanley's, when he gets dressed up to go ring shopping, that's his Sunday clothes. That's a pretty sharp outfit. So many pockets. So. All right. John Madsen, best alien.
Okay. I'm going to have to go with Molly Shannon's character in the middle of Mexico.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a good one.
All right, yeah. Josh, what about you?
So I went with Nick Offerman.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Best special effects, Joshua.
So I just went with the whole like scene there with the 68 Mustang, like in Bullet. Like that was pretty awesome.
What about you, John?
I'm going to go with Casa de Padre and all of the life-size backdrops that they must have painted. And also they painted them really blurry, too, to kind of give the illusion that it's off in the distance, but it's mostly just a blurry just painting.
So I can't wrap my head around how they trained that white cougar to drag Will Ferrell's body off screen. So that's pretty amazing.
It must have been Grizzly Man.
Yeah, all they right. learned their lesson with, was it Siegfried or Roy that got mauled? Yeah, they took some lessons from that, and they didn't use the same tactics, yeah.
All right, John, your favorite location?
Well, it's got to be the secret love lake.
Yeah. What about you, Josh?
I just went with San Francisco and Bullet. I liked how they used the city as almost like a character in that.
It's fun to see San Francisco back then. Yeah.
So it's weird because we see a lot of movies in the 60s and 70s where the big cities look so, it looks like you walk into the city and you've already got an STD just by like walking down the street, but San Francisco still manages to look pretty classy. All right. Well, I'm going with Stanley's Land of Make-Believe.
his using the imagination to become a pigeon and flying over Tokyo to and see seeing the all Chinese the Chinese people. Yeah.
All right, Josh, what's your favorite song?
My favorite song is Yo No Sé. they were singing around the campfire.
Around the campfire. Padre.
Yeah.
That's the right answer, Josh. That's mine, too.
Oh. Right is so good. One of the lines, ¿Por qué es lenta la tortuga? Like, why is the turtle so slow? Like, it just was such good introspection. Shout out to the jazz flute in Bullet. But
yeah, I was probably swayed by Disembodied Red Lips, but I chose Casa de mi Padre.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a good
one. Good.
Yeah, okay.
They should just lyricize that in the next James Bond movie.
All right, John, your favorite guest.
I'm going to go with Genesis Rodriguez playing Sonia. This movie introduced her, I believe. So,
well, was she previously in Novelas?
Maybe.
Josh, are any of these actors or actresses from this movie veterans of Novelas?
Oh, not that I'm aware of,
no. Oh, okay.
But I'm not the expert.
Yeah. Well, Josh, who's your favorite guest?
Oh, so for me, it was Nick Offerman, the Agent Parker.
I thought about picking him.
He killed me, man. Yeah. That guy made me laugh.
Well, I went with the happy fat Houston Cougar making an appearance. All right. External recurring character. There's a lot of them. Go ahead, Josh.
Steve McQueen's the obvious one, I guess, right? Because you guys did what's the one about the strangers and then the Towering Inferno? I put a Norman Fell, he was Lieutenant Baker in Bullet and Mr. Roper on Three's Company. I'm just hoping you guys maybe reviewed Three's Company at some point.
I pointed out we were watching this, and I'm like, hey, that's the guy from Three's Company.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, okay.
All right, John, who's your recurring character?
Before I get to my recurring character, I'm just going to point out that Genesis Rodriguez is in a TV series called El Club de los Tigritos. And she was in a TV series called Prisonera and a TV series called Days of Our Lives and a TV series called Dame Chocolate and a TV series called Doña Barbara.
Ooh.
So that sounds like telenovela right there.
It sounds like a lot. Doña Barbara. Yeah, she's like grew up on telenovelas here.
Mm.
Okay, so pretty cool there. But she's a guest in this movie.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay.
Yes.
Are we doing external recurring character?
Yes, sir.
Outside? Okay, so been on the podcast before. Well, it's got to be Robert Vaughn because he's the same character in Towering Inferno.
He plays the same character.
smarmy senator. Yes. Yes.
Oh, I had Robert Vaughn and I crossed him out. That makes me happy. So I'm going with another Robert Duvall, who yeah. we've had several times before. So. Mm. All right, then.
To Kill a Mockingbird and Godfather Part Two. Yep. Off the top of my head, anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, internal recurring character, a little harder, John.
Very. I went with heterosexual relationships.
Okay.
Mm.
Kind of broad, I know.
Yeah.
Okay. Broad but appropriate.
All right.
I went with sexual harassment. Yeah, probably, you know, I don't know about Bullet, but the La Onza, you know, being the uncle of Genesis,
like, the sexy
uncle. A little harassy. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, I went with casual racism. So,
yeah.
I think Sylvester Stallone was responsible for at least 10 different racial slurs.
And then you got Robert Vaughn just kind of being like, yeah, no black doctors in here.
Yeah. All right.
And and then cast him Jamie Padre.
Yeah. Josh, your favorite death, the best death.
Best death was definitely Johnny Ross being killed. It was death by shoulder wound.
Yeah.
All right, John, what do you think?
Honorable mention to the crew of Casa de Mi Padre that were just demolished by the coked up tiger. But I'm going to – the answer is obvious, and that's Armando's mom shot to death by her son.
By her son.
Yeah, I don't know how he – The bad guys were holding her perfectly still for him to shoot her right.
Yep. Okay, so I gave an honorable mention to Raul, who, as he's crashing to the ground, finishes his drink. But then the winner for me is when La Onza is killed by Armando and Sonia, whose fingers simultaneously pull the trigger.
Oh, yeah.
Love killed La Onza.
Yeah, that's good.
Hmm. All right, who's the best villain, John?
Okay, I'm going to go with the twerpiest lord of Flatbush, Wimpy. Like, doesn't do anything except harass people who play pool with him and then six the other lords on him. I felt he was the most villainous lord.
Mm. Well, Josh, what do you think?
So I went with the New Jersey education system for not teaching their kids about consent and sexual harassment.
Or
she was nippers. Trying, yeah. But they were switching her drawer around and sending her to the office to do something else and writing stuff about like the kind of dicks she likes. Yeah.
Man. Okay. I have some honorable mentions. Consignment is a villain because Stanley hates consignment. The ring dealer who's about to get his face pushed into the ground. But ultimately the main villain is Chico, who's just, you can't say anything good about Chico.
No, Predator Chico.
Okay. All right, John, who's your hero?
All right. My hero is in Bullet. One of the other cops, Stanton, who was in charge of watching the witness who was shot in the leg. But survived and therefore a hero. Also, Dr. Willard, the doctor who helped pull it out, even though Chalmers, Super Nintendo Chalmers, was just like not dealing with it.
Oh. Josh, who's your hero?
I went with El Gato Blanco. Because he brought Armando back to life.
Yeah.
So it's like the crow, huh? Right? Did we say that?
Like the crow.
Yeah.
So I went with Eddie. Eddie, who I think hopefully steered Butchie onto the homework.
Eddie, the guy at where they drink the egg creams.
He slings egg creams and advice.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, wholesome Eddie.
Yeah. Best movie goof, Josh.
So I had like a recollection in Bullet that like when they're in the hospital. Like, and Bullet goes out to warn the cops that are standing guard, like, that when he goes out there that it's nighttime. Mm-hmm. And then when they leave the hospital, you know, after they try and kill that guy that it's day.
Yeah.
Am I?
No.
The lights are off inside the hospital. You're right. Right. Like the hospital's completely dark as though it's nighttime.
Yeah.
That was an unanswered question I had. Why are the lights off?
I thought about that. Yeah. I was thinking that when that happened, I'm like, wait a second. My justification was that he was chasing him around the hospital for 8 hours.
Okay. Well, very good. All right. John, did you have a goof?
Yeah, I have a goof. Okay. I have nowhere else to say this, so my honorable mention is the people who built the terrible hotel where they put John Ross, and the elevator was just like 3 feet wide, and so they had to put the cop on the stretcher, and then they had to stand the entire stretcher up inside the elevator, like so. So he's like, they had to like put his head up, and, you know, so he's like strapped into the stretcher and just still on the elevator standing up. But the answer, the biggest goof is all of Lords of Flatbush for having garbage sound.
Garbage sound. The Foley is so bad.
Yeah. No boom mic, no microphone on the actual – they all sound like
– There's like,
and no subtitles.
Maybe we should be glad for that.
It's like it's 1968. Hire a sound guy. Yeah.
There's at least 5 solid minutes where Stanley's trying to hotwire the car, and it's just
– Yeah. And the only bit of dialogue – that was clear to me in Lords of Flatbush was when Annie was just chewing her gum loudly. I got that pretty well.
Okay. Well, my movie goof is in the Lords of Flatbush when the lords are on their way to beat up the preppy, and they're walking down the hill or on the grass, and Wimpy like slips and falls, right? They don't reshoot it. Because they can't afford to, they just leave it in.
Yeah, nice.
So, all right, John, what's your LOL?
My LOL is Armando sort of helping Sonia get on the horse and just leaving her there on her stomach.
That was funny.
Oh,
man. My favorite funniest moment was that whole scene between Armando and Nick Offerman, but like specifically when he says he's going to light Armando's city up like a lit fart.
Okay, so my honorable mention to Armando's father being insisting that Armando was responsible for the wedding massacre. But my winner is the Lords of Flatbush end credits, where it's like this song where we're having a good time, the wedding's over, and we're just reliving Chico's greatest almost rape moments.
Oh gosh!
Oh.
I almost couldn't believe what I was watching when that came on.
All right, so we are to the key of D minor moment, Josh. The moment that just made you weep instantly.
Well, that was definitely the pigeon make believe scene in Lords of Flatbush.
That was real. It got real.
That's real.
It got real. It did.
What about you, John?
Okay, that instant in Bullet when Arnold Rennick, the real Arnold Rennick, opens up the chain, and then he gets back on the bed, and then the guys come in and they shoot the cop, and then that look on Rennick's face when he's like, oh my gosh, you're going to shoot me too, because he didn't see it coming. Yeah.
So I'm going to go with Butchie, who's got such a bright future, and then he gets hit by a car and it's almost taken away.
But then he was doing like an Irish jig at the wedding, just like he was holding the crutches out to the side and he was dancing everywhere.
He can really move, yeah. Okay, your what the heck moment, John?
I know there were some better ones. I mean, the movies were filled with them, but the only one I thought to write down was at the very end of Bullet when the helpless witness, you know, for the mob is trapped in the vestibule and Steve McQueen just guns him down.
So mine's close to that. What do you got, Josh?
Well, so, gosh, I guess I got two. So one, the runner up, I guess, is the bare bottom scene in Casa de Mi Padre. That sure. just cracked me up like crazy. But then the one that just, that I will never get over is at the very beginning of the movie when Will Ferrell, he goes and picks up a baby calf, like this tender yes. moment. And then it cuts to the scene and the calf is like burnt black.
Yeah. It's like a way different animal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Oh, wow. Okay, so I have an honorable mention with Johnny Ross, who looks like he's scot-free on the grass of the airport and runs back to the terminal. but I'm going to go with the best what the heck moment for me was, Chico, you made a mess.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a nice
That was a PG movie from 1968.
Oh man, so this movie demonstrated how badly PG-13 was needed. So, best quote then, Jonathan.
I went with, "Hey, Rocky Marciano, how are you?"
All right, Josh, what about you?
I went with, "Hey, Gay Moose, take a deuce in the caboose."
So I'll go ahead and honorable mention Mexico is the Bestico from Sheila. Yeah, that was a
good one. I should have picked that one.
But from Bullet, like this is the, I don't know, I'm making too much of this, but it's when the detective says, "All right, Bullet, play it by the book from now on." And then Bullet says, "Does Chalmers run the case or do I?" And then the chief says, "All I'm interested is in results. Do whatever you think is best." So, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. Anyway, all right, fine. Best scene. Here we go. Best scene, John.
Well, I'm going to go with a bullet car chase. It's famous.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and it was a car chase, and it was good, and those are always fun. That's why movies are made.
Yeah, that's my pick, too. What do you got, Josh?
That was, yeah, that's like my 1B. I went with that scene between Armando and Agent Parker, which just kills me. So,
So my honorable mention though is Chico and Stanley discussing pigeons and traveling. that was the apex of that movie. That was the real climax there. Where
it was, yeah, it was.
You know, they punched it out, but they didn't really work it out, did they?
No,
but maybe.
No, they needed to go to make-believe land to work it out.
Just watching Sylvester Stallone get so angry because Chico refused to use his imagination. Oh, okay. All right, Josh, who's your favorite actor?
Will Ferrell.
Okay.
Oh, I thought he was hilarious. And just to learn Spanish for this movie is pretty awesome.
What about you, John?
Actor? Uh-huh. Okay, honorable mention to Stephanie Maloof, who plays the pissed off maid in Casa de Mi Padre, who always has like the really annoyed look whenever Sonia comes in or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm going to have to go with Felice Orlando, I think is who it is. And that's who plays Albert and then, quote, John Ross Rennick.
Ah.
So, because he was playing Rennick the whole time, and he was in the background of San Francisco that whole movie, and we didn't know who he was.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm honorable mentioning Christina Aguilera's lips, and then I'm going to go best actor for Simon Oakland, who played Captain Bennett in Bullet. He was a tough
Captain Bennett.
Tough captain, yeah.
Hard as nails.
He's the kind of captain that Joe Pagliagli wanted in what do you call it? So I Married an Axe Murderer, right? That's who he wanted Alan Arkin to be. Anyway. All right then. Okay, unanswered question. You guys have any?
I think we may have answered them all. I have one that I can't read.
Well, it's too bad.
Well, my question was whether whether Stanley's wife was actually pregnant.
She's too skinny to be pregnant.
So is that really the case then?
I don't know.
It seemed a little ambiguous to me.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think because I feel like they said she wasn't pregnant like later in the movie, and I can't remember the exact details, but I guess it doesn't matter. You know,
yeah, they're divorced anyway, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess another think question that, would be, oh, yeah.
That wasn't true love? That
well.
Okay. So I want to know how Gato Blanco brought Armando back to life.
Mm.
And maybe I'm not meant to know.
It's just the power of the Gato Blanco.
You're not meant to know. See, this is what I was kind of getting at with the whole Casa de Mi Padre, it just wants to see how loose it can go with reality, right? And so I kind of have a feeling, you know, when they were writing it, they're like, what if there's just, you know, like something supernatural, like a magic tiger, and they just did it, you know? So it's like, okay, you guys can do that because you're making a really weird movie.
All right. Special award time. Okay, most Joshy character, and I'm starting off with Stanley Sweet. John, what do you think? Who is the character that is most like Josh?
The character... not Efren Ramirez, but Armando's other friend, who in the middle of the shootout,
the curly hair,
with the curly hair, yeah, that guy, that's, you know, kind of has a frowny face. But specifically the part, you know, because at the very end when they're shooting up Onsei's place, you know, and you don't see him forever, but then like suddenly he just appears there and throws Armando the rifle. He's like, Armando, and he throws him a rifle, and he just appears there. So that's Josh.
All right.
So I guess I went with Armando just because I feel like I look just like Will Ferrell.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Well, all right. John, what's the most Joshy scene?
Joshy scene. Well, the scene, it's the Casa de Mi Padre love scene with the butts.
So I was going to say the punch off.
That
got a little carried away.
Yeah. That tracks.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Josh, what are you saying?
Well, I feel like I'm a tender lover like Stanley, and like so the pigeon scene like really resonated with me.
Okay. All right, Josh, you don't get to answer. John, what do you think is the most Josh movie?
Most Josh movie. Well, I'll Lords of Flatbush.
Yeah, I would have said that. And I'm a little concerned here by how much Josh seems to have enjoyed Casa de Mi Padre. but my pick was the Lords of Flatbush. And Josh, you're not allowed to answer that just yet. So,
no.
All right. Okay. Josh, this question is mostly for you, but we'll answer it as well. The movie that was most close to what you thought it was going to be, and then the furthest from what you thought it was going to be, like what was the most different from your expectations and which met your expectations the most closely?
Yeah. So it's actually the same movie. It's Whoa. The Lords of Flatbush. Like, cause I kind of expected it to just be four dudes being awesome all day long. But like, it was like a little more uncomfortable than I expected.
All right, John, what do you think?
The closest I thought Bullet was, I knew because Bullet is like kind of in the cultural consciousness. It has a chase scene. He's a cop. And this cop is like based off of that Toshi guy. You guys ever see, Zodiac?
Yeah.
Zodiac.
Yeah.
Mark Ruffalo's character is a real character. Mm. A real person, like a real historical figure, because he was searching for the Zodiac Killer. But Bullet is based on that guy, right? And so is Dirty Harry. Bullet and Dirty Harry are both based on that Toshi guy. And so I knew a lot about Bullet, right? And so, yeah, so that was the closest expectation.
Okay.
My least close is Lords of Flatbush, because I was like, what is going on here? What's with this garbage sound? And are they doing anything else but harassing people? And why is it taking so much joy in it?
So the thing
– why is it sucking so much joy out of me?
Yes.
So the thing is that movie, the budget was $150,000. And if they had spent every penny of that on sound, that still is a really poor like budget for sound, right?
I suppose.
Yeah. So, okay. All right. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
What was yours, JR?
Well, I'm getting interrupted by texts. Hi, Zoe. So let's see. So I think the one that was the closest to expectations was Casa de Mi Padre. It was pretty much exactly what I thought it was going to be. And it was funny, and it was decent, but I think it was pretty much what I thought it was going to be. Furthest from expectations was, I think, Bullet, because I didn't remember it well, and I thought it was going to be like a kind of a more standard cop show with a satisfying ending, and like the movie ended, and I was perplexed. That was maybe the furthest from my expectations. Oh, boy. All right. Okay. Anyway, here we go. The best and the worst Lord of Flatbush, John.
Oh, the best and the worst. Yeah. Okay, well, you know my worst. The worst is Wimpy. But the best, best is Chico. Butchie. Yeah. I guess Chico is literally the worst.
He's the worst.
Chico is really, really bad. You're right. I mean, I guess I should say it, you know. I guess that's a problem. I mean, Chico, it's like he's just blatant about his badness, yeah. But Wimpy just sneaks up on you how much.
So it's true. There's that scene where Chico is meeting Jane's parents, and they're like, so what college are you thinking of going to? And you know that Chico can't even graduate high school, and he's not fooling
you. Well, he's 40, and he's still in there.
All right, who's the best?
That was lovely. Like, his dad is like, her dad is dressed in his like general's uniform. Boy, talk about a class of culture.
All right, John, who's the best Lord of Flatbush?
I said Butchie.
Butchie, very good.
Because he does homework. Yeah,
right, I think, Josh, you and I are the same on the worst, because it's got to be Chico.
It's Chico.
My best is also Butchie.
Me too.
Butchie's the best.
Butchie.
Yeah. Okay, Battle Royale winner. I don't know who all is involved, but I think because he's sneaky and because he can sick the gang on you, I'm going with Wimpy wins the Battle Royale.
Well, is this a Battle Royale of just between the Lords of Flatbush, or is it between the different movies?
It's supposed to be between the different movies.
Okay. Okay, so I went with I figured that Bullet is the only guy who can actually kick some butt in real life. And so
he's got a gun.
Andy has a gun, so.
Andy has bullets.
Yeah.
Andy has bullets.
All right.
I wanted to pick Bullet, but unfortunately, to my dismay, it turns out that Armando can just be risen from the grave by White Cat. So I went with Armando.
All right. So we got to rank these real quick. I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys what the Facebook folks thought of these three movies. And there were so many votes, but most of them were for Bullet. And I think if Katie could have given negative votes to Casa de Mi Padre and Lords of Flatbush, she would have. But we do have one, Sean Cortez, who gave some love to the Lords of Flatbush.
Ooh.
Yeah, but let's see. Josh, let's start with your third favorite.
Okay, I was going to say first, Sean obviously hasn't seen it, but so my third favorite, Lords of Flatbush.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, my third favorite, kind of by a lot, I would say Lords of Flatbush.
I don't even know who I'm talking to.
And not because it was offensive, and that's really why I didn't like it, but I seriously am giving it eighth place because of sound issues.
So my number three is Casa de Mi Padre. I thought it was like kind of like a below average Will Ferrell movie, but I guess you guys liked it significantly more than I did.
Whatever. So that doesn't sound too bad, a below average Will Ferrell movie.
All right. So my second favorite is The Lords of Flatbush. But anyway, and so you already know my first, and there is a gulf between number two and number one.
Huge, huge gulf for me too.
Yeah. So you're number two.
In my household, Casa de Mi Padre was not well received. It's mostly from the other person in my house, actually. I thought Casa de Mi Padre had some funny jokes, but I do have some severe Will Ferrell problems and severe, you know, questioning of why even bother making this movie. You know? But it was kind of funny. But big drop off between number two and number one, which was Bullet. Mm.
Yeah. Same for me. Big drop off between two and number one. So number two, Bullet. Number one, Casa de Mi Padre.
So Casa, yeah, because you watched it after midnight, and you were in it, and it was in the specific hour.
It made me laugh so hard, in so many different places. I really liked it.
Well, that's good. We were kind of all over the place on the rankings. That really surprises me.
Yeah, we were like, this is where my big chasm was.
The Bullet was good. I got to say, I enjoyed Bullet. Yeah, but. Yeah.
All right. Well, Josh, you're not done yet. You got to choose your movies, and now you're stuck with what we're giving you. Although you get to choose one of those two. So,
yes,
our future business. You are coming back in 2 weeks to discuss female director movies, and the fans have spoken, and we're watching Big, directed by Penny Marshall, and I'm eager to discuss it because there's a major, major plot point that just drives me crazy. But we'll get there. So, John, what's your female director movie?
Is a movie from 2019 called Atlantics, and it's by a director named Mati Diop.
How do you spell that name?
Matidiop. And then the film is spelled Atlantics.
Okay. I can't believe you didn't choose Point Break. I thought that was like the most given thing that would have ever happened on this podcast.
I know. You know Point Break is my favorite movie ever, but I can squeeze Point Break in many other things. I thought it might be fun to watch a movie called Atlantics by Mati Diop.
Well, very good. All right, Joshua?
So I went with Point Break by Catherine Bigelow.
I knew it. That's perfect.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, all right. Wow, that's pretty good. Okay.
I'm excited. Thank you.
So we got an 80s, a 90s, and a 1000s movie. So, all right. Good times. Well, those will be fun to watch. In the meantime, Josh, after you've had your fun with us and we've had our fun with you, we will be welcoming Mark back, who will be bringing three movies he's never seen before. And so no voting on movies this time. In 2 weeks, we'll have him announce his movies. And I thought it might be fun for us, with our vast knowledge of who Mark is, to guess. And I'm going with Fried Green Tomatoes as one of his picks.
Oof.
Yeah. Okay. Now that might be... That might be it. Did they make a sequel to Brain Scan?
You mean Brainstorm?
Brainstorm?
No, not that I'm aware of.
All right. Well, I would guess the untitled sequel to Brainstorm.
Okay.
For Mark.
Brainstorm. I'm guessing the sequel to Lords of Flatbush Paradise Alley.
All right. Well, awesome. We will see. In 2 weeks, we'll see what Mark wants to bring. And then Mark's going to have to stick around for his community service and the randomly chosen one, which I'm afraid might win. But it's number 57. It's called Act 2, and it is the middle film in a trilogy, which could be interesting.
That's a good category.
Yeah. So I am choosing a new category I threw up called House Cleaning, and it is Charles Bronson movies because he cleans house.
Okay. Nice. House Cleaning.
And John.
Okay. Oh, okay. I am picking. Okay. I'm going to choose 24-hour Party People, and that's movies that take place within a single day.
Ooh.
Very nice.
So we can watch High Noon.
Yeah, we can watch High Noon. We can watch Can't Hardly Wait, which we despairingly did not watch during our 90s high school movies.
All right, let me just find this on the list here. 24-hour Party People. Do you know what number it is? It's number 62.
62, yeah.
Do you edit this out when I do this?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I mean, that's that. So we don't have any more business to go through here, but it's been a pleasure, and I love how economical you guys are. It's we've been podcasting for 2 hours, which means I will get at least 6 hours of sleep tonight, so that's pretty cool.
Woo! Wow, no, this is record time. Wow,
yeah,
we're doing well. Before we go, I just want to say Everybody Remember July 1st is the live event. It's kind of crazy how it's sneaking up on us. But the live event is at the Post Theater on the University of Utah campus. So mark your calendars. If you want to spend the whole day with us, that would be great. If you want to spend the evening with us, that's when we're going to watch the final movie and we're going to be recording. And it's going to be detective movies. And it's up to you to debate with us what constitutes the definition of a detective movie. We just want to make sure it's a good time. So, so we'll debate about that in the future. Yeah.
We're going to have a special podcast where John and I figure out the three movies. And in which we will debate. And one of the things I want to do in that podcast is I want to go through each movie and decide if it makes the cut. And I kind of feel like you're willing to accept anything, but I'm feeling a little grumpier than that. So anyway, we'll discuss it in a very special podcast called The Decision. I don't think anyone's called any event that before. So I think we've got that. But it'll be good. So anyway, I look forward to it. I think all three movies are going to be so much fun, and we'll pick a real barnstormer for the evening event film, and we'll have a good time.
Yeah,
that'll be fun. Looking forward to that.
Yes. So we're looking forward to having you there in the building. It'll be so sweet. And everybody also write this down. You can only bring prepackaged snacks into the Post Theater.
Oh.
So don't bring a giant tub of red vines.
Okay. So I do want to bring up, John, if you can give the phone number again. We've been talking on the Facebook page about detective movies that you would like us to consider. And that discussion is still open. If you haven't put in your two cents yet, please do. And if you haven't joined the Facebook page yet, please do, because that is where the fun happens. That's where you get to make decisions. But what we'd love to have you do for this special podcast is we'd love to have you send us a voicemail where you argue for your detective movies of choice and tell us why we should include them. And we'll put your voicemails on. We'll edit them in because John knows how to do that somehow. And then you'll be famous, just super famous. Yeah. So, John, that phone number so they can tell us which detective movies to choose is what again?
Everybody write this down. 801-896-4542. 801-896-4542. In fact, if you're on your phone right now, just push the dial thing, push the phone button, dial it in, call it. You don't have to leave a message, but then it's in your phone, and then you can like save it later. Yeah, 801-896-4542.
And you don't have to worry about someone accidentally answering it. There will be zero human interaction here. So.
No human interaction. Yeah. This is the next level of our culture. It's leaving messages for each other. Yeah.
All right. Well, John and Josh, it's been a pleasure. This was so much fun. I had a blast talking about these movies, and I'm a little disappointed that the movie I thought that was the funnest to talk about is the one that you guys hate the most.
Well, I hated it, but it was fun to talk about.
Yeah.
I can appreciate it for that reason. Josh, thanks for taking a chance on these three movies.
Thank you.
It's nice to see your vulnerability.
You just got to jump in the deep end.
Josh is going to go cry as soon as we're done podcasting.
Hey, this was a ton of fun, you guys.
All right.
2 weeks from now.
Sweet.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
You always know these psychological terms, right? Yeah. Of like, oh, this is why a brother and sister don't like love each other.
The Westermarck effect.
Yes, Westermarck effect. I swear there's some kind of effect, and I don't know, maybe I'm the one who should coin it, but I'm like there's an internet phenomenon when you don't interact with someone on the internet because you have a feeling you're the first person to react. It's kind of like, you know, oh, I want to go browse in the store, but no one else is in the store.
Yeah.
So it would just be me and the clerk in the store, so I don't go to the store. Sure. And so like I think like there's this weird thing where like if say it's Instagram or something, and I'm like, oh, that's a cool picture, and I see that no one's liked it, then I won't like it because
you're wondering why you're wrong.
I'll feel too like either I'm wrong or I'm too awkward or it's just too lonely, just me and the creator of the thing. And I think that's kind of like with us. I think people are more likely to contact us if they think they're not the only person contacting us.
Okay, sure. I'll lie, John, and then I'll try to look my wife in the face when I go to sleep.
You know what? I'm the opposite. Like, if I'm on...
That's why you found our podcast, Josh?